the century-old aircraft system that still drives your modern glass panel. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Paul, as always.
In the July edition of Over the Airwaves, Bob, you had an article headlined Committing the Pitot-Static System to Memory, or something along that line. I don't have it right in front of me, but tell us why that's important. I can close my eyes and I can see that diagram, but why does that remotely matter when we're up there flying?
Well, understanding any aircraft system is a requirement of the practical test standards. We as pilots need to know how the systems in our airplane work, and we have to be able to explain them. The pitot-static system is arguably one of the most important systems on an airplane. In fact, current discussion on Air France 447, that tragic crash over the Mid-Atlantic with all aboard being killed, is being looked at as a possible pitot tube problem. That's a very, very important instrument or device on the airplane. So what do we do? We're flying. We see some unusual behavior in our instruments. What does this mean? What is doing what? Could it be something as simple as a frozen over pitot tube with ice? Could it be a bug in the pitot tube? If that's the case, how do we fix it? What can we expect from our other instruments? Knowing how fast we're going, how high we are, and our rate of climb or descent is arguably the most important information we have on board an airplane. And all of that is being driven by the pitot-static system. So, for our listeners, take out a piece of paper, draw it, and link up the static port and the pitot tube to each of those three respective instruments, and ask yourself what goes wrong if either or both of those ends, the pitot port or the static port, are plugged. It's a self-test, and if you're okay with that, fine. Then go on to the next system and see if you can fully explain that to yourself. And use the fifth grade example student as your protege. You know, are you as smart as a fifth grader, as the local TV show here purports? You know, see if you can explain it in ways that individual understands it.
But Bob, I have a brand new glass cockpit. Surely it's not dependent on something as antiquated as 100-year-old tubes running around the aircraft.
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised what is known or is not known. My attorney, Dean Drew, here in Buffalo, and everybody needs to have an aviation attorney, particularly people like me that are out there flying in different aircraft and all the time. Dean was telling me of a case. He was representing a couple of Gulfstream 4 pilots who came in for a mandatory inspection of the aircraft, and there was an operations inspector from the FAA standing there and simply asked the first officer on the board of this airplane for evidence of a 30-day VOR check. And the first officer then quipped to the captain, says, "George, do we have a VOR on this glass-equipped airplane?" George scratched his head and says, "If we do, I haven't used it ever since we've been on the airplane." Both those guys were slammed with a 60-day suspension, and they're now fighting it. This is nothing to joke about. We do have glass cockpit airplanes, but a lot of those basic systems like VORs and pitot tubes are still in that system, and they have to be operational. But we have a unique challenge with our G1000 setup in airplanes, because our DPEs are asking our students to explain how the air data computer translates, and where does it get its information, and how does it display it on the screen, and the automatic heading reference system, how does that work, and where is it getting its information from? We're long gone from the days of vacuum driven gauges, but the pitot tube is still there, and the static port is still there, and that system has survived all of the latest technology. So that is another reason why we need to know how the system works.
Well, and Bob, I think I was obviously being facetious when I asked that question, but the thing that people have to understand, I think, about pitot tubes, and the reason they're going to be with us pretty much forever, is that there are a lot of things you can do with a GPS. You can tell what your ground speed is. You can tell what your direction is. But a lot of the tricks that glass panels do still rely on, you have to know, and all the aircraft parameters are still expressed in indicated airspeed, or in some cases, true airspeed. And you cannot know airspeed without something like a pitot system.
Exactly right. I mean, the GPS will give us ground speed, but we can have a ground speed of 30 knots and still be flying through the air at a very safe speed. All we have to do is be in a 50-knot headwind. So you're right. We need to know. We need to have those pressure-sensitive instruments. You know, we've come a long way with altitude recording with the GPS. We can do that, not to the extent that we can do it certainly with a sensitive altimeter. But still, we need those instruments to that system to drive those important instruments. And again, it all comes back to there's much more to learning how to fly an airplane than landing and taking off. We need to know how those systems work and what to do about them if something should fail.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, you had an article entitled "Wind: A Few Knots Either Way Makes a Difference." Let's talk about that. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, also proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training at the Buffalo Lancaster Airport in Western New York. And Bob, in the latest edition of Over the Airwaves, you were talking about how winds a few knots either way makes a difference. I can think of a couple of circumstances in my experience, limited as it is, where that was obviously true. But what prompted you to write this article? What was at the core of this thought?
The core of this thought was a presentation we had at our flight school by a lead meteorologist from the National Weather Service station here in Buffalo. This individual was not a pilot, but he is the lead meteorologist. He's preparing all of the TAFs and the METARs for the Buffalo area. And he put up an interesting slide on the screen for us to all look at. And he took about 15 weather parameters, icing, thunderstorms, clouds, turbulence, anything you can think of, dew point, moisture level, and he then related them to accident statistics, accident data. And when you look at 15 weather parameters, two weather parameters had been influencing, had been involved in the vast majority of both fatal and non-fatal accidents. You might think thunderstorms ruled very high. You might think that icing ruled very high. Surprisingly, they ruled very low. The top two weather factors that are involved in the majority of all fatal and non-fatal accidents were visibility and winds.
What are the circumstances during the course of a flight in which winds a few knots either way can make a difference?
Landing. What's the difference between a safe crosswind and a crosswind that has a few knots beyond safe? Okay, so that. So we're talking about landing in a 23-knot direct crosswind versus a 28-knot crosswind. Those extra 4 or 5 knots could make the difference. Mm-hmm. So that's one example. But let's just take a typical short field landing or a landing on any kind of a 2,000-foot field with obstacles. If you look at the performance tables on any aircraft, shifting from a 2-knot headwind to a 2-knot tailwind has a profound difference on landing distance. That will vary by airplane, but transitioning from a headwind to a tailwind, that's why wind shear is such a factor. In fact, in asking the lead meteorologist with the Weather Service to what extent they pay attention to PIREPs, and this is something that we wrote about in the current issue as well. PIREPs are issued for all kinds of things. And he says the FAA, these PIREPs are reported to the FAA, to the air traffic control, through the air traffic control system. Not all of those PIREPs are sent over to the National Weather Service. All wind shear PIREPs are automatically forwarded to the National Weather Service. Turbulence, icing conditions are not necessarily passed on to the Weather Service, but wind shear is. So anytime there's a sudden wind change in direction, is a critical factor. So I call this, and others have called it, I don't take credit for it, simply wind awareness. Are we aware of the winds when we get in the airplane? I've seen countless cases where students or pilots on flight reviews, I'll ask them, well, why did you base, what did you base your altitude on? Well, the winds are such and such, and I said, well, what winds? And they said, well, here it is, right here in the METAR, you know, winds. I said, well, those are surface winds. Oh, well, you don't have to be technical, Bob. I said, well, I'm not being technical. Surface winds can be, you know, diametrically opposed to winds aloft.
Mm-hmm.
So is there, do we all really have the wind awareness that we need? If you're flying a tail dragger, anybody who has experience in a tail dragger understands that winds are critical. I mean, we have to know right down to the knot what the speed is and what direction they're coming from.
Well, Bob, as always, thought-provoking stuff. We'll encourage our listeners to visit overtheairwaves.com and take a look at the current issue. And we thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.